Welcome to MM Plays, our podcast where we design, play, and discuss a game and campaign. Along the way, we will alternate episodes between actual play adventures and the analysis and discussion of games and design theories that relate to the campaign we're playing. For this campaign, we'll be using the mechanics of Cortex Prime, designed by Cam Banks. We randomly selected a theme and ended up with swashbuckling high school urban fantasy. So, join MM Plays as we explore and enjoy a new campaign.
I'm Chris Nizak, and I'll be playing Silas Flamesworth, son of the Flamesworth family with the frozen and fiery intertwined soul.
I'm Old Man Logan. I'm playing Henrik Gunny Gunderson, son of the enigmatic Winter Wind and rookie elemental mage.
My name is Jerry, and I'm playing Santiago Zircon. He is the rebellious and reluctant scion of a powerful magic family.
I'm Phil Vecchione, and I will be your GM.
Oh, look, it's Bowtie Pasta.
Everybody, all the kids laugh.
Bo loves that.
He just turns and looks at his dad for a second, shakes his head.
Wink and a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Whose house are we doing the ritual in?
We can do it at Silas's place. We'll do it in the ritual room.
Sounds good.
I'll lay out a bunch of sleeping bags.
How fancy.
I will have them set up already. In fact, I suggest that we all go to sleep before the ritual, because it's going to be 4 a.m.
Do you guys want to just go to sleep, or do you guys want to just hang out in dream space?
We just hang out in dream space. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
First of all, I just have to say that I have never seen a house with a ritual room before. It's a bit of a thing.
She's been in it before, though.
Yeah, it still doesn't lose anything.
Okay.
Like, yeah. It's just...
Still impressive every time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought my parents had a nice house.
Look, I'm sorry I'm rich. I can't help it.
It's not a strike against you. I'm just saying, like, wow, like, talk about goals.
I shouldn't say that I'm rich. My parents are rich.
Sure. But talk about goals. This room is a goal, mm-hmm. Like a ritual room.
Yeah, it's going to kind of suck when I don't have access to it when I leave.
I think you'll always have access to it.
You'll be successful enough to have your own.
When I go to Yale, I'd have to go 400 miles to get back to it.
Yeah, he's going
to
be casting some ritual on like some shitty apartment in New Haven.
I mean, I assume Yale has a ritual room.
There's a secret college within Yale.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to Yale because it's just a college.
Yes, the secret magic college.
I'm sure the two of you can also put something together to yourself wherever you guys end up dorming.
I mean, I'm sure Yale has a ritual room somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how like practice rooms and like, yeah those things, mm-hmm. You can sign them out?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. sure that's, you know, sign out a ritual room.
T, when you go to UB, I'm sure they'll have one there too.
I could probably make my own.
You probably could. I mean, don't you have one in your basement?
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's kind of under the carpet. We kind of just drew it on the floor.
I've never been in your basement.
It's a nice basement.
Yeah, it's a nice basement.
Nice basement.
All right.
Private.
Yeah, it is literally like you have to roll up the carpet, push the couch out of the way.
Like, it's like a poster. There's like a framed photo of Josh Allen on the wall.
Yeah, your parents don't ritual all the time, right? Like it's not a common occurrence.
That was probably a project we did when I was like 6 or 7. Is we like chopped up the basement and put down bricks, and it's very artistic because of the nature of my family.
Oh, nice!
But it was like a weekend family project where we just like put bricks down and glazed over them, and all the kids, because we were younger, took turns painting the bricks different colors.
Well,
and all that kind
that's
of stuff.
Funny because you guys probably didn't have to like lay bricks down and paint them. You could have just magicked it together. You're a bunch of earth elementals, aren't you?
There are kid handprints all in the floor.
That's cute.
That was part of the ritual.
Oh.
Doing it with your hands. You learn to control things.
That's
you
smart.
Have to learn to do things with your hands before you try to learn magic to do it.
No, I totally dig that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure that your parents just use the ritual room at Vale headquarters.
Probably.
But it's nice to have one at home.
It's like a pool, right? Like having a ritual room is like having a pool.
I feel like having a ritual room is like having a sauna.
Yeah, yeah. Like your house has a sauna.
Some people have the, you know, the 4 foot above ground pool.
Exactly,
and
yes.
Some people have the,
oh,
you know,
that's
the,
actually probably
the,
better.
The in-ground, fancy in-ground
with the heated. Yeah. It's got the retractable
and some
cover.
Some people have the little plastic kiddie pool.
And,
correct.
And some people have the infinity pool that's glass on the ceiling.
Correct.
That's my ritual room, in case anybody was wondering.
Mesame's like, my mom has a ritual room. It's a freezing.
It's very cold.
Yeah, it's really cold.
It's why I didn't think it was weird, because Mesame has one.
Yes. Also, because, yes. You know,
we just look at each other.
A day in the life of a trust fund baby.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that we kind of go well together.
Yes.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Power couple.
Hell yeah.
So that whole conversation happening in dream space, as we were talking about it, it kept shifting from my ritual room to T's ritual room, but like these... like idealized versions in our heads of what they are,
mm-hmm.
to Mesame's freezing cold one.
When Bo, who's kind of shaping the space, like when they talk about like your ritual, it's impossibly big, right? It's like, yeah. Like in Bo's imagination, that room is like 4 times the size that it really is.
Cavernous.
Plus, when you talk about Urlises, the only thing that Bo can conjure up is that it looks like something out of Frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like all you're getting is images of the castle from Frozen.
That place is like hoth cold.
So in this kind of ethereal space, Bo puts together what T actually recognizes as her bedroom, except that it's the bedroom floor, like one wall, and then the rest is just this ethereal space. It has a shifting color to it. It doesn't ever stay one color, but it's not anything else. So you're just kind of floating in this partially built bedroom as Bo is constructing the ritual. It's going to be a group effort. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need your thoughts about Gabby and Jesse. That's how I'm going to try to hone in on their dream space. I'm going to be the conduit, but you guys need to drive it through my focus. I will be the source. I'll be like the light, but you have to like turn the light and point it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Cool. Because mechanically, it means you fuckers have to roll for this.
Of course.
Just going to also say that. That is how the ritual is going to work. So decide who's going to kind of be the focal point, i.e. who's rolling, and the other ones of you can contribute to that role.
Well, of course, T is rolling because he's really good at rituals.
Yeah.
You've got this, hun. She like pats you like.
His emo's not bad. We're going to start by focusing on the fact that Gabby's nosy and Jesse's got an ego.
So tell me about a time where Gabby was really nosy, like in school.
There was a time that I was just beginning to manifest my powers. And so I was kind of going around, playing around with whatever I could with the basics of earth magic. I'd always played with earth before, but I was kind of playing around with earth magic. Gabby was constantly coming around, watching what I was doing, and actually being fairly friendly about it, but asking lots and lots and lots of questions. I began to realize that, among other things, I realized now that she was asking about my family.
Mm.
She was asking what we do, how we do it, how the magic works, that sort of thing, who my sister and brother were interested in. She was basically asking me questions about my family, but actually asking about gossip. And Gabby likes gossip. She likes to get in there. She wasn't malicious about it. She wasn't being nasty or snarky, which is the key, that Gabby was being good at wheedling information out without being nasty about it. I ended up talking to her all about my family, every little thing, every little detail that's there. She knows more about my family than I knew better than the teller at the time. Nothing horribly like scandalous, just lots of embarrassing secrets, things that my brother and sister might have done when they were younger that would be embarrassing if it ever got out, that kind of thing.
Cool. Start building your die pool.
So we'll start with Emo, which is D10. So I've got a D8 for, this will probably be Mage, because he's trying to lean pretty heavily into the magic side of this. This is less the school thing and much more trying to tap in the actual ability of magic.
Okay.
It's a ritual.
And not veil magic.
Correct. And then he'll take the D8 for, this is where it's actually important for him to be who he is. He's going to do Say My Name. So I have a D10 and two D8s.
Yeah, he's T. He's good at rituals.
And we'll draw on our mana pool for this, because it's a ritual. I'll take a D10 onto that as well.
Silas, tell me something about Gabby.
So I remember in Veil training, in the first month, me and Gabby were sparring, and Gabby uses this magic book, because she believes knowledge is power. And before we sparred, and she knew she was sparring me that day, she chatted me up about fighting styles, and I had no idea that I was sparring her because she looked at the sheet that Miss Cortez came up with before.
Of course she did, right?
I did. So I was talking to her about how I fight with my with a sword and how I was trained and whatnot. So of course, when we're fighting, the first thing she does is unsettle my footing with a magic spell. She actually used her vision to find some soft spots in the ground, let me right into them, so I fell down, tripped me, and then put the book on me and closed it, and it's like Mjolnir, so it just kept me down and I couldn't move. That's what I remember about Gabby.
Love it. Contribute a die to this pool.
I'll give you my emo die, because this is about emotional memories.
Another D8, so I'm at 2D10, 3D8 right now.
Swing it over. Now, if this is a second assist, this is a plot point?
It is, if we're using that.
If you want to contribute a die, you can plot point this. If you don't want to contribute a die, still tell me a memory about Gabby.
I will give you this plot point.
I will take your plot point.
When I was going undercover, I distinctly remember we were having a conversation and Jesse was very skeptical about what was going on. He was like, he seemed unsure, but Gabby, I felt like she seemed like she had my back. It felt like there was a, like, oh, we can trust this kid. He'll be fine. kind of a thing. And I wonder now if it was genuine or if she was just doing that to see, you know, what she could glean, because she's tricksy like that.
Yeah, was there any conversation where she learned something about you?
I feel like I may have mentioned a couple of things.
Like your dad?
You know, I probably did mention my dad. In hindsight, she's good at making people talk. Getting people to talk, I should say.
She's very good about finding information.
Yep.
Contribute your die.
We're also going the emo route here. That is a 10.
I forgot to add one more die. I'm going to add the D10 for awesome girlfriend, Bo, who is helping with this ritual.
Yeah, I mean, Bo is like the focus of this ritual. So yes. You have a shit ton of dice. My pool is, the difficulty is a D10. Mm-hmm. It is just hard to find them. There is a distinction which you guys are not aware of, but I will tell it to you for purposes of any ones that I may roll that you will wish to buy. They have a D10 for cloaking magic.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
They are purposely hard to find.
You want to add this because I'm helping and my anger is showing?
I will take your D6.
Because I was expressing a time that I got pretty mad because I got tricked.
Yeah, you've been a little on edge all day. Yeah,
that's absolutely fair.
Okay. 3D10, 1D6. 16.
I have 4D10, 3D8.
And you got 2 plot points.
And I have 2 plot points.
That is a butt ton of dice.
So quick reminder, as Jerry's looking over his dice, heroic successes do count for extra successes. This is a multi-success test. It currently has 2 successes.
I will spend a plot point to make this a 25, which will give us a heroic success.
It does indeed. And that will give you 2 successes, and that will actually reveal their location.
Oh, we don't even need to go to their house then. Good.
No, you guys pool your efforts together. It takes Bo a bit to focus. And then with T guiding Bo and all of you telling your stories and just remembering Gabby, eventually just outside of the room, a vision starts to form that you can all see. Right away, it forms into, like, you can just tell from the style of furniture, it's a hotel room. And then you can actually step off of Bo's room into the hotel room where you can see Gabby and Jesse. They're in a king-size bed. Mm-hmm. They're clearly sleeping together, but they're not like entwined. They're just in the bed. But you can look around and like investigate the room.
Rule number one, in your hotel room, there's always a pad on one of the tables or the desk with letterhead from the hotel that's got the name of the hotel and the address on it.
Correct.
It does. You pick up the pad of paper and it's the Mosey in Williamsville. It's a really nice hotel. It's a relatively new build. It's near the Wendy's on Main Street. You pick up the pad, show it to everybody.
Yeah, we got him.
Well, let's go get him.
Miss May is like, look at this place. In the garbage can, there's like takeout containers stuffed in it. I mean, they're laying low.
T's going to walk to the phone and then walk to the door and double check and check what the room number is.
You actually can open the door because clearly Gabby knows what room they're in. Mm-hmm. Because it's Gabby's dream space, you can actually see into the next room because Gabby's super nosy and knows like that there's clearly like a businessman in the next room with the TV on or something.
Gabby knows what's in the next room because Gabby's magic power is Gabby can see through walls.
You can see because it's Gabby's dream space. You can actually see into the adjacent room. And you can see that like there's a businessman, just some dude in there with like a suit hanging up in the closet kind of thing and a rolly bag.
All right.
Like they're on the 5th floor. They're up off the ground.
Anything else we need? I look around. Anybody out in the hallway? Anybody guarding them?
You can see, since you asked, they clearly have a ritual circle, points set up in the room to shield this room.
What does it do?
It prevents scrying magic.
Okay.
They've been laying low in this room.
Let's go get them.
Do we go get them or do we put them under surveillance by the veil to capture them when they go to the ritual, if they go?
I mean, our mandate was to apprehend.
Because I'm all for it. I would prefer to apprehend and bring them in now.
Let's do it.
Oh, let's do it.
You all wake up and Bo like hugs you. She's like, you did it.
We did.
You told did you. It.
T was really good at rituals. And you were too.
Yeah.
I was merely the source. Like I was not controlling that ritual.
No, but you facilitated.
You were the focus.
Yeah, Bo, we never would have been able to do that without you. They had a ward set up against to protect against scrying. You got right around that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Dreams are dangerous.
Want to go nab some criminals?
Boy, do I. Especially these two.
Time to break out the pillow hammer.
I will text my dad.
Your dad calls you. The second you text him, he calls you, and it's clear that he's awake.
What did you learn?
Give me 1 second. I'll be right upstairs.
As soon as you head upstairs, he's in his office. The door's open, and he's reading a book. Snaps the book shut. Where are they?
They're at the Mosey, room 512.
Okay. What are you doing next?
We're going to get him.
Do you need any assistance?
If you have people you can trust.
I have a handful of agents I can trust. Have them meet you in the lobby.
Fantastic.
Which ritual found him?
Bo's dream ritual. Dreamers are dangerous.
Shakes his head, he picks up a pen, and he writes a note on a notepad and like puts it in his pocket.
I see him do that. I don't think you want to recruit her. You already used her a couple of times and she did not appreciate it.
Takes the note out. I could have a conversation with her.
You can. She's not interested in terrorizing people.
Yeah.
She just wants to help people.
Well, like I said, I am not destined to be in this position forever. Better Vale people can come after me. Not come after me.
I mean, they might come after you too.
Yes. Well, Better Vale people should follow me. So perhaps if it's something she's interested in. If not, again, but boy, that is super helpful. Anyway, I'm going to contact Vale Central and let them know that we're making more progress. In the meantime, I'm going to actually get up and head to the office, because if you find them, we need to bring them into the office.
Well, I'll see you there then with them.
Pats you on the shoulder. You guys are doing really nice work.
Thanks.
Are the rest of us outside? Do we hear any of this?
I think at this point you guys are like bunched up on the stairs. Like the door is open, so you guys are just all bunched up on the stairs, knowing like you shouldn't interrupt this.
You come walking out and Bull runs up and gives you a big hug, and then just backs off and walks away.
Then I look at the rest of you. Stop spying on me. And then I walk past them really quickly. And I stop at messing around like you're fine.
I didn't even have to be there.
The proper term is eavesdropping, not spying.
Keeping an eye on. Remember, it's keeping an eye on.
Also, I like this feeling you're having.
I walk out the door. I turn the car on. Get in the car!
We don't have it, but I feel like appropriately in this show of a game, there is a moment where you guys are all driving on like the 290 at like, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning. The sun's barely peeking up. Some music, some ominous like showdown music is playing as you guys are riding out to head to the hotel.
We're all drinking coffee to stay awake.
We just all slept. We should be fine.
Yeah, you actually feel pretty good. Bo also enhanced that. Time in dream space is actually sleeping.
It's so refreshing.
I know, isn't it cool? I can study and do that.
That's amazing.
It's harder because I can't look at books and stuff when I'm doing it, but I can go over memory stuff.
We can totally destroy next year during the academic decathlon, or as T likes to call it, the knowledge bowl.
Are you offering me a position in the academic decathlon?
We got to convince Lisa to let you on the team, but yeah, she's in charge.
Trust me, we all know Lisa.
Isn't it just maybe a tiny bit unethical?
To study while we're sleeping?
I don't know.
Did you just ask me if it was unethical, Prosperity Guy?
Look,
it's just studying.
Pull back. We just see these cars racing down the highway. You guys come walking in the lobby. It's 5 a.m. There's a lobby person, but there's already like 3 guys in suits, and one of them is talking to the lobby person.
This place is nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, right?
Mm-hmm. We go to a lot of nice places. We also go to a lot of not nice places.
True facts.
Bo's like, you have to figure, they're prosperity mages on the run. You would think they would go to a dive hotel, but it's just so on point that they would go to a fancy hotel.
I agree.
Easy money's easy.
What's our play?
Let's be smart about this, actually. We have Vale agents with us.
Mm-hmm.
Watch all the exits.
Yeah.
Messimate, you can cover one. I'll cover the other. That way, if they try to escape, we'll ice it up.
Mm-hmm.
The three of you, because Bo's got the pillow hammer and you got the wind magic, so you're fast. You can catch him and you're super strong. You can knock him out if you need to or entrap them.
Mm-hmm.
You grab him. So that way we have all of our bases covered. Plus the elevators can cover whatever we miss.
Ready?
Awesome. Okay, on three, right?
Yes.
Is it 1, 2, 3, do it, or is it 1, 2, 3?
We go on three. One, two.
No role necessary for that particular part. I will say, so in the ensuing chaos, the door comes flying open. They clearly wake up, but are completely disoriented. The contest is, can you keep them contained in the room, or do they manage to get past the two of you into the hallway where Messime and Silas will have to deal with them? So they are a D8 difficulty, but there are two of them, so I'm going to just pull in a D8. I am going to give you a D6 asset for surprising them at 5 o'clock in the morning. Like, you caught them off guard. They have one more asset, a D10. They have an escape plan. They always knew they might have to run. They are 3D8, 1D10.
Which one of you is going to be the primary ruler for the contest?
Why don't you go? You're more martial than I am.
Gunny.
I will do that.
Cover the D6.
That's for the surprise.
All right.
And you get one for Bo, if she's here.
Bo's got that pillow hammer. She's like, I'm going to fucking crush one of these two.
Also gets one for you because you're there to assist.
And I'll use my jock.
Well, it's a D12 jock die? Jeez.
He's
huge. I know he's enormous.
He's been hitting the gym. He's swole.
Swole. Emotions are running high. This is an emo. That's a 10. This is Veil Business. That's an 8. And this is apprehending the prosperity peeps. So we're going to go Sins of the Father on that one. I'm dropping my Sins of the Father to a D4 to get the plot point.
Okay. I need to know what's going on in your head. You've evoked both emo and you've now turned down your Sins of the Father. So just tell me, give it to me, like what's going through your head as T kicks in the door.
We need these guys. They've been on the run. We need to catch them. It's imperative to part of the plan. They might know something. They might know the key piece of information that we need to solve this problem. We can't let them go. This is all or nothing right here. All or nothing.
They're also responsible for you learning the prosperity ritual.
They helped me across the threshold, and maybe there's a little payback in my mind. It's... twitch.
Set my difficulty.
Do you want to throw your easy money as easy in there, or...?
I will pull it into my pool.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
All right, we're going with 18.
It is conceivable I can pull a higher than an 18 off, but it is not going to be easy, especially if these dice crap out. That's a 16. That's a 1. So I can pull an extra die into my total, and that 16 and 5 will give me a 21. I remain in the contest.
The same dice pool, and I will remove that D4 and go back to the 8.
Big number, no whammies.
Right now, we're looking at a 17 plus 6 is 23, which is more than 21.
Right, so the door kicks in. What happens?
The first thing I do is I try and blast them with wind to keep them on the bed.
Jesse rolls over and starts to get his earth magic started, reaches for his daggers. He gets the daggers out, and T just pins the dagger right to the floor with his bigger sword. And basically, they're struggling with earth magic. Bo takes the pillow hammer, and while you're pushing the bed, she takes the sheet and kicks it with the back of her hammer. So now they're tangled up in the sheets a little bit.
So they roll off the bed and like flip the bed up to try to give themselves cover as they try to compose themselves.
Oh, they flip the bed up to give themselves cover, and we push them against the wall with the bed.
That's them.
Oh boy.
They lose. You're just like standing there with this gust of air as this king-size mattress has pinned them to the wall.
Gabby and Jesse, you are under arrest in the name of the Veil.
Bo walks up behind each of them and gives them 99 hits. They don't give any cause any trouble.
It looks almost something like one of those evangelical things where they put the hand on the head and like they fall down and pass out kind of thing.
Except it's a giant pillow
yes.
hammer.
The two Veil agents, once they hear Gunny say they're under arrest, the two of them walk in and cuff them up. Which actually looks like it's more than cuffs because they have to be restrained magically. But they also quick put a little illusion over them to walk them out because now people have shown up in the hallway. The third Veil agent who was in the lobby is upstairs with you guys and has cast a small illusion to make this look like police. Nothing to see, people. Just some identity thieves living off of innocent people's credit, apprehended by the Amherst police. As they haul them out.
T puts the bed down and puts the door back on its hinges as much as he can and then pulls it shut.
The hinges are made of metal.
Yeah, we'll try that.
You put the door back and then like just concentrate for a moment and you're like, yeah, that seems about right. As fast as you guys arrived, like within just like a few minutes, everybody like heads out, not through the front of the lobby, but out through like the parking area. You guys get in your cars, the Vale agents stuff Gabby and Jesse into one of the Suburbans and take off. You guys head for Vale headquarters. As the sun comes up, we see the train of cars, the Suburban from the Vale, plus your cars heading back into the city towards Vale headquarters. That is where we're going to stop for today, and we'll pick up with Gabby and Jesse in custody in our next episode.
Let's do stars and wishes.
Stars and wishes. Star to Amethyst.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
Nice job.
Absolutely. Star
to Amethyst. Nice job. That was fun.
I love playing Amethyst.
Once again, Bob, Clueless in Love is like your, like every character you've ever played.
There's always, they say, a little bit of yourself in every character you play, and every character I play basically needs to be hit with a clue by four.
You know, I actually got Bob to actually be interested in a woman and actually show interest in a woman in my Call of Cthulhu game.
I have yet to achieve that in a game, so that is still a, that is a wish for me.
You know how I did it? I made that woman interested in him a little bit at first, and then more interested in somebody else, and then he was mad. So then when it became a competition for Bob, it was like, oh, okay.
All right, I mean, that's going to be my new personal goal in future games. Is to
it's funny.
Coming up next, Passion de Passionnés.
You don't have a choice in that game. You have to be interested in somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. What else did I like? Another star for just even suggesting that we cut over to T's house. That was great.
That was a great idea. That was a lot of fun.
It was a good scene, right? Mm-hmm. Like, well, there's so much serious, and then that was a good fun scene. I got a star for the opening conversation when we were all just sitting around talking. I like when we just sit around and talk sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A little banter.
Jerry, I hope you were okay. You had passed me a note for something. I went with not the letter of what you wrote, but the spirit of what you wrote.
No, that I just figured that was perfect. The idea that when you've got a couple together that aren't together, generally somebody ends up playing around with the laundry. And the idea of her taking his shirt or his boxer shorts, something like that, would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's either going to go cute or embarrassing. One of the two would be good.
I always go cute when it goes bow.
Yeah.
That was a good
who call. Came up with the dream space thing? I don't remember in the heat of play.
That was me, actually.
That was a star to you, sir. That was a great.
Yeah, it was good.
That was a great solution. Also a star for you for calling, and I'm pointing at Chris, star for you for calling him out on prosperity magic.
Absolutely.
That was going to be one of my stars was the interplay between Gunny and Silas with the prosperity magic back and forth.
It was two pieces to it too, right? It was like my dad's like, you should spy on your friend. I'm like, what the fuck? And then I was like, about prosperity magic, which is bad anyway. So I'm like, well, I could do both of these.
I love that you interpret that as spy on your, like, he's like, this is your friend, make sure he's okay. And you're like, my dad said to spy on you.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily, like, nowhere, when we play that back, nowhere did Victor say, I need you to spy on him.
Because my dad would not say that out loud.
No,
like
of course
that.
Not. You interpreted what he said as code.
I feel like that interpretation was unnecessarily harsh.
Oh, man.
Maybe a little bit.
I mean, I'm okay with it. Like, I didn't have a problem, but I did find it
Gunny
funny.
Gunny did not appreciate the heavy-handedness of your prosperity mentions, but again, he gets it.
I hope Gunny understood why afterwards, because I stopped doing it after I said my dad told me to spy on you.
Absolutely, yeah.
I like the thing where Messmate was like, he's super uncomfortable with it.
Yeah. And that whole thing with the dream thing, it suddenly occurred to me, ooh, maybe we can use the dream thing to find them. But also it was like, I need to come up with something because otherwise everything's going to be this prosperity thing. And it's like, I can't.
You're going to get your shit called out on it.
I don't want to get called out again. It's like, I have two really good ideas, but they're prosperity ideas.
Jerry, at any point during those scenes, were you also singing Dream Warriors?
No.
I was definitely singing Dream Warriors in my head.
I was, that song is in rotation almost every day in my thing, Freddy Krueger. I liked the interaction with Silas and his dad, especially the conversation at the end with the dream magic thing. That was really good with the crumpled up paper and everything.
Yeah.
You called Victor out on his shit on that one.
Yep.
Like, it was good, because that note was definitely, like...
Just a playback to Bo being like, I can't do this.
Yeah, they've tried recruiting her before. Yep. It's not a...
That's just tried. She's done it.
Yeah, Bo's too sweet for this kind of work.
Yeah.
Bo would be... Bo, future Bo, I'll just give a hint now, and I'll wait for the epilogue to detail it, but future Bo is definitely on the path to being some sort of psychologist.
Yeah, you can't do too much future, because these characters, some of these characters are going to be played
oh, no.
in existing college.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, we know Bo's, but Bo's going to probably go for some sort of
she would be a degree great for therapy. Counselor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought the play of this session was really, really clean.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with it. Like, it was a little bit open, but not terribly open.
I felt like we got out of scenes when we needed to get
start,
out of scenes.
Start a Chris.
Start a Chris for helping with that. Yeah.
Those won't
you,
all make
yeah,
the cut.
You won't hear that, but right. I was like, we're good, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would just add, I just know better now just to ask the question. Like, we're yep. good with the scene, right? Like,
yeah.
You guys like to talk and talk and talk, and I end up having to cut, like, yep. minutes mm-hmm. and minutes at the end of scenes mm-hmm. when I'm like, well, that was a really good ending. And then we just keep going. I'm like, well...
Now I got to cut this.
Yeah. Yeah. So now I'm just doing the producer thing. I'm like, it's weird because we're playing a game, right? And I usually just, like, let the game master do that. But I over here, I'm like, now I have to think about, like, how do I want to edit this?
Yeah, it was good. It
as
was,
a producer, yeah. you need to do that because...
I'm learning that.
It's okay in a role-playing game for us to carry on that banter. But in recorded play, we don't need to have that go on.
Yeah, plus when you guys give me good endings for scenes constantly
and then
you
keep talking. Yes.
I'm like, would you just stop?
We are very good at spoiling endings to scenes by dragging them out.
The other problem is a lot of times you'll come to a good ending for a scene and then you'll say something relevant after them. Like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah. Because now I don't necessarily want to cut this.
Yeah.
And
it sounds like we just ended the scene three different times.
Yeah. So it was good. Yeah. It was good that you called it. And I've like I said, people aren't going to hear it in the recording, but we all heard it at the table.
As we have been RPG advice givers in the past, it's actually a good thing to think about in your regular role-playing games.
Sure.
Just ask, like, are we good? Like, somebody else that's not part of the thing be like, is that the end of the scene?
Yes.
Is there any, or the better question is, like, is there any more beats you want to hit here?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Like, that was the better, once I figured out that was the question to ask, like, then we were better off.
In my heavier prep days, when I was a younger GM, my scenes would often, because they were far more structured, I would have a goal for the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I hit the goal, I would know, like, okay, well, this scene achieved what it's supposed to do. I don't always do it when I'm ad-libbing,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, one of my improvement areas is to kind of, when we start ad-libbing a scene, think real quick to myself, like, what is the goal of the scene? And then know, like, oh, when we hit it, I should, like, start closing out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even for day-to-day. I'm not talking about recording
day-to-day.
Stuff, but
sure,
day-to-day.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Because in my youth, in my heavy prep youth, I think I was much better at that. In my ad-lib days, I think that's actually something that I lost compared to my prep days.
For this particular topic that we're talking about right now, which is a little outside of Stars, and which we're actually talking about advice, it's interesting that you think that. I think the goal is a great way to go about thinking it because it's easy, right? Like, what is the goal of the scene right off the bat? Because I'm always thinking about scenes and story structure. Like, what is the beginning? What is the middle?
Yeah.
What is the conflict point? Is it resolved? And now are we done? And when you're with a bunch of other people, you still have to ask the question because you don't know what they're always all thinking. Did you get everything you wanted to get out of the scene?
Yeah.
And that's a good question to ask. Because then somebody can say, no, I was hoping to do this if they want to. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, cool. We all know what to play towards now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So, like, that's a cool, like, bit of advice that you can get out of playing, out of what we're talking about right here.
Yeah. And cool. So my wish is I wish to be more cognizant of that as I'm I'm helping to frame scenes. Yeah.
I would also, like, as a wish, like, we can all participate in, like, finding the ends of scenes. Like, or asking that question, like, is there anything else anybody wanted to get out of this?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's like when Jerry was like, we're upstairs, like, I want to have this thing with Bo with the clothes. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Right. Like, I thought that was a cool scene. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice storytelling beat.
And then it cut back to you guys. And then,
yeah.
So when it looked like Bob was kind of trailing off is when it called out for dinner.
Yeah. Smart. Right.
Right.
Is a way to
that
end
was a
this,
good point. Yeah.
Is a way to end a scene.
Yeah. I didn't know where else you guys could go with that. And Bob was starting to do that thing where he was starting to stutter a little as he was processing. And that's when I was like, oh, I'm just going to save by the bell here.
Yeah. And it's a good way to transition or end the scene. Right.
Yeah.
And then we could do the bow tie joke.
Yep.
Which we set up, by the way, I got to start. There was like a lot of stars for stuff like that, which I will go back. And when I listen to it, I will realize like how many more of them there are. There was a lot of good setups and payoffs mm-hmm. today by players. To me, that's high end. That's high end storytelling.
We were on today. Mm-hmm. I felt like we were on.
I'd also like to give stars to everybody. I think and Chris will be able to tell us this more. I think we were a little better at the pause and do something and to give us some breaks.
Yeah, I'm trying not to say some of those things on the recording, but yes, the guys were much better today about their cadences and stopping and then just starting again so that it'll be a lot easier to edit.
We had a good pep talk about it.
We had a good pep talk about it.
Yeah.
Good pep talk.
Yeah, no, I was pleased overall. Like, you guys did a good job. That heroic success was a really nice not have to belabor that search any longer. I'm glad it happened with the dream sequence rather than the dream sequence plus something else.
Also, good job coming around to tell the stories of the story behind the dice rolls today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, it was very apparent at the end, but we did it a lot throughout the entire day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that wouldn't have to be a star because I think that's just a best practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, you know what? I get, so I know for me, one of my flaws is when I get excited for combat scenes or like kind of challenge scenes, I always start to lose the description unless I slow myself down. Like when I get excited, I start to just get into the mechanics of
it. Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I get that with both of you.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why I have to call it out almost every time.
Yeah. No, I take zero offense to side GMing on that kind of stuff. Like, I appreciate it. Like when you say those things, I'm like, oh good, I'm glad somebody said it.
Yep.
Because
yep.
I was totally failing at that moment. So
far as wishes go, technically maybe not really a wish, but I feel like there's gotta be one more big prosperity conflict for Gunny before this thing is over.
You don't think it's going to be when the ritual goes down and you're like super tempted to take their side?
That's probably it. But like, I feel like there has to be that one more moment.
Yes, Gollum, throw the ring into the volcano.
Dude, there's a reason. The reason I keep pushing on you to not cast prosperity magic, aside from a story point of view, is if you fuck up and roll ones, that thing goes up and that makes the time that you have to like roll at the end a lot harder. And I would really Gunny not to betray us.
Yes.
So I don't have to beat the shit out of Gunny.
Oh, believe me, Gunny would really like not to betray you guys too.
I'm just waiting for another one, a couple ones to come rolling around.
I mean, if you rolled three ones on a roll, you're taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, you're playing bow or something, which would be super weird.
Yeah. I'm also kind of hoping for like, you know, a big moment and then I fucking crush the roll with like some heinous number that's just stupid.
You better
and
be you, like, you better, yeah! You better accumulate some plot points.
Because you know, Phil, if I was Phil, I'd be like, well, I got these 4d12 just sitting here for Gunny's resistance.
Yeah, probably.
Like, Gunny's opposed will for prosperity.
One of two things is going to happen in the climactic battle. I'm either going to start rolling max dice, or I'm going to be rolling like buckets of ones. There'll be no middle ground.
Dude, I love my dad. Like, Silas loves his dad. But my dad is so suspect. Because mm-hmm. he's so willing to sacrifice people to get to achieve his goals. It's fine, Gunny. Go cast some more prosperity magic.
Nah, he didn't actually say that.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
No.
Yes, he did.
Silas, the thing I love about Victor is a complex character. Victor tries to be a good dad. Victor is also like the head of the Vale, and
yeah.
And those things sometimes have really weird yep. juxtapositions because yes, he was totally fine with you when you suggested using prosperity magic to find them. He was totally okay with that. And then warned Silas like, well, if he goes through with it, you better like keep an eye on him in case we have to snatch him
yeah.
up.
So you know what happened there is he's like, yeah, you can go cast prosperity magic and I'll just make my son take care of the problem.
Yeah.
Because he's in the best, not because he's my son, but because he's in the best position to handle it.
Yeah. Likewise, as soon as you're like, we couldn't have done it without Bo, right? He's like,
correct. That
note to self.
This has been multiple times that yep. he's done this stuff.
He does fully admit he is a flawed man, right?
Yeah.
Like he's,
yep.
he has used us to his best advantage multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true facts.
And that's okay. Like, I mean, I love the character.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
But don't mistake one with the other, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like Erlis, man. She's not a good person.
No.
Erlis is that character that's like clearly a bad guy. You're just lucky that like she's on your side.
She's our bad guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when I love that conversation when T's like, she's on our side. No, she's not.
No,
like,
your
mom and your dad were like, no, she's not.
Yeah. Your side just happens to coincide with her side right now.
Our goals aligned.
Yes.
And they're like, sort of.
Yeah, sort of. Like, I want my daughter back.
Our goals.
I'm going to kill this guy.
Our goals are not aligned. Our goals are not diametrically opposed.
Correct. Yeah, I think
the enemy of my enemy is my ally at this point.
Yeah, yep. I suppose.
I mean, as it goes, right? Like, T's parents are the most wholesome. They're just good people. Victor wants to be a good dad, but he's not a good person. That's his juxtaposition. Is like he's proud. Like he's genuinely proud of you. You are stepping up to an extraordinary situation. This whole like 6 months has been this extraordinary situation that you've stepped up to and have risen above, like in True Flamesworth style. But at the same time, yes, like there's a chessboard and you are all pieces on that chessboard.
Yeah.
Like that is the juxtaposition of Victor.
And like Silas is way too, in a lot of ways, rigid, right? Like he's like, we have to do the right thing. And that's not always the right answer. Like there are sometimes the answer where you're like, you don't have a right thing to do. Like mm-hmm. it gets hard.
Yeah.
And then T, man, I wonder sometimes because T is willing to make moral choices that are not for the greater good. They're actually more about people and a little bit more about self-centeredness.
T runs on emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
T's upset. T's okay breaking some rules.
Yeah.
Yep.
Does it save the people that I give a shit about? Fuck everybody else? Then it's fine.
Yeah, I actually like that.
I know.
T's flawed.
I actually really like
all these characters are flawed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, you need to have flawed characters.
Yeah, man, Silas is too damn innocent. Not even innocent, too damn white knight.
Yeah, what's the...
altruistic.
Yeah.
It's not even altruistic, it's shit. I can't think of the word, but yes.
Delusional?
No, he's not delusional.
That's close to accurate, actually.
No, righteous. He wants to do this by the book. He wants the law to be followed. Like, he also wants the law to be good.
Yeah.
Like, Vale law allows, like, mind wiping and shit like that.
He's not okay with any of that.
Right. Yeah.
He's also not stupid enough to realize that he can do anything about it currently.
Yes. Unlike the popular magical school thing, this school's got, like, a fucking real, like, this Vale thing's got a real dark side. Like that has to deal with the reality of some of these problems.
It's a real world. It feels like a real world government.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, at the same time is of course flawed.
Because, I mean, the goal is to do the best you can for your citizens, but sometimes you have to do a bunch of terrible shit to do the best you can for your citizens. If you're a good government.
Correct. The concentration of that much power in one place is inherently problematic.
Yeah. And that's if the government's operating on a, with
noble
the
causes.
Things that I just said.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it goes downhill from there.
Yeah, when it actually becomes about power and greed, like, and maintaining power and whatnot.
Yeah.
I mean, we're playing it pretty kind, comparatively speaking.
You wait till college.
Yeah.
Try to remember how idealistic you were in college, because that's the...
Look, man, to me, if the Veil was really, like as cutthroat as they could be, like, all these prosperity mages would be getting off left and right.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, this wouldn't be a kind thing.
Correct.
This wouldn't be an incarceration memory wipe thing. This would be, like, murder everybody thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the Vale's actual approach to it is they consider it like an addiction. You got caught up. It would be like an opioid addiction. Like,
yeah.
You got caught up in this stuff, and now it's beyond your control. Some of you have to be imprisoned, but we would like to rehabilitate a number of you. Anyway, you guys were wonderful tonight. Thanks for a great game.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Good times.
All right, everybody, have a wonderful time. We'll be back soon.
Bye, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Mr. Ectomark Plays. Now let's do some Patreon shoutouts before we get out of here. Let's start with the Royal Court. First off is Tiffany Reynolds, the untitled Tiffany Reynolds, the Polish Ogre, our very own Polish Ogre, Lars Henrik Evjan, the Lord Out of Time, Jim Likes Games, the Royal Merchant Emeritus, Chromatic Chameleon, the Queen's Spy Mistress, J.T. Evans, the Queen's Librarian, Schmitty, the Keeper of the Labyrinth, Andrew Dacey, the Warden of Whiskies, that's a good one, John Carney, the Court Necromancer, bringing back those dead people, Tiberius Starcrash Smith, the Baron of Britannia, maybe he's friends with the Green Knight. Then there's Eric Bontz, the Weregator, and Kevin Lovecraft, the Royal Beard. Now there's some other patrons that I want to mention right here. The Deliverator belongs to an elite order, a hallowed subcategory. Bridget, Athelus, Not That Billy Mitchell, Fiona, Kathleen Halperin, Christopher Gamelk, Michael Esperum, Joseph Null, Carlos, Heptalema, Michael Draper, Cubano, Alice Kira, Jim Fitzpatrick, Brantley Harris, Steve Radabaugh, Richard Wyatt, Joseph Peralta, Brian Kurtz, Jared Rasher, Eileen Barnes, Brandon Barnes, Lee S., Tentacle Duck, Aaron Lakowski, Brendan Dennis, Padme's Lover, Ninjabi, Andy Olson, David Walker, and Victor Wyatt. Thank you so much for being our patrons. If you'd like more content like this, check out polygamero.us. We are the Polygamerist Podcast Network, where we help you play your best games. If you are interested in supporting this show and other shows on the Polygamerist Podcast Network, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/MMP. If that's not your thing, we'd still love your support by listening. We have Pandas Talking Games with Phil and Senna. It is car talk for your game. Ask them questions and they will answer them. There's the Gnomecast, gnomes giving their best GMing advice to help you play your best games, and they're also trying to avoid being thrown in the stew pot. Don't worry, if they die, we have clones of those who've passed away.
Lastly, there's Thaka with Advantage with Ange and Jared. They talk about D&D topics while covering the history of the game and how it's evolved through the years. With that, Misdirected Mark Plays is a Polygamers podcast production where we help you play your best games. Mic drop. We out.